Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven.
Hello and welcome. Today we have the one and only Nando Brown. For the listeners in the dog industry, he needs no introduction, but for those of you who aren't, Nando is one of the duo that is the School of Canine Science, teaching dog trainers and behaviourists all they need to know to be and do better. He's been on the telly box for series such as Rescue Dog to Superdog and Teach My Pet. He's an author, he's the founder of the World Scent Dog Association, and he competes and is a decoy in Mondio Ring, basically a fancy dog sport. He lives in Spain and is a presenter for Good Morning Spain. He shares his life with two bitey things, or Malinois, and they're called Fizz and Risk, a Springer Spaniel called Aria, and a very cute little mixed breed, Crumble, plus there's usually a foster dog or two. Nando and I met over a decade ago through courses, and I think I was following his Incredimal page just before he got the lovely Fizz. And yeah, I'm sure we'll have a few laughs and swear words along the way, normally when Nando's around. So before his head gets any bigger, let's get on with it. Welcome, welcome, Nando. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. That was a lovely introduction. That was really nice.
You're welcome.
We've got a chat right, didn't we?
Yeah. I was trying to work it out. It was like IMDT days and
It was before that. So the first time I met you was at Crufts.
Yes.
Yeah, yes, I was on the IMDT stand.
Yep.
You were like, leave it out, I'm married.
Fact. Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, long time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've spent some time recently actually clearing out old photos. The more videos and stuff that I make, the more that I'm filling up my Mac, which is very frustrating. And so I'm having to delete loads of old stuff. But I found a couple of old videos of you with Fizz at the dog training barn in Banbury. And she must, I don't think she was even 6 months at that point. I'll have to send them to you just so you've got them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd be well interested to see them. Yeah. Before I got my first Malinois, I was like, I need to make sure that I'm ready. I only had her half an hour before I went, I'm not ready for this. So yeah, she was a baptism of fire, let's say that.
Okay. So we're obviously going to go over mistakes and things that you've done with dogs. Are we starting with Fizz?
Well, Fizz was not my first mistake. Jesus. I think probably start at the beginning because a lot of dog trainers get into it because they need to work with a dog. They need to work through problems with a dog. Mine were just very extreme. So my first dog was super easy, super simple. I mean, I made copious amounts of mistakes. I got her from a traveler community, met up with someone in a lay-by, picked up a little staffy, and but she was super simple, super social, like dogs, like people. I could take her down. I was that guy walking down the road with no dog on, no lead on.
You were cocky.
She'd come in the pub. Yeah, like she was just so easy. And then my first mistake that bit me in the ass, let's say, was my second dog, and that was a Cane Corso. I remember having my staffy Minky and going, well, this is easy. I'll get another one. And I got a Corso. Oh, that was just a catalogue of errors. I made every mistake in the book.
Give me some examples.
Okay. So, start at the top. I found the breeder in a Exchange and Mark magazine. I then went to the house and all the alarm bells were ringing. Like, the place stank of piss. The puppies were in the front room and the mum was outside behind the French doors, but she was screaming at the doors trying to get at me when I walked into the room. And I was a bit like, whoa, that's a big dog. And the breeder was like, oh, no, it's okay. She's just protective of her pups. And I was like, well, I suppose that makes sense. you know? So I then looked at the puppies all playing in the middle of the floor, and I went, that one's nice and quiet. That one that's tucked away behind the sofa. I went, oh, kind of like, I know he's going to be big, but I want a dog that's going to keep itself out of the way and be quiet. And the breeder kind of looked at me and went, yeah, yeah, you take that one, mate.
And, sucker.
yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I took the wrong puppy out of the litter. Then I just under-socialised or socialised him inappropriately. And then I didn't know about the body language properly. So when I thought he was just a bit shy, I didn't realise that was going to turn into defensive aggression. He then started like grabbing people's clothes and pinning dogs to the floor. And I started looking for help. So the next series of mistakes that I made with that dog was looking for dog trainers, assuming that somebody that was on the television was the be all and end all, and not realizing what made a good dog trainer. That brings up a whole tangent that's more relevant to dog trainers than it is to dog owners. But I was passed around from trainer to trainer. And then eventually I found somebody who wasn't scared of him, because I'd seen a lot of trainers, shall I say. Let me say, I saw a lot of ethical trainers, and mm-hmm. they weren't willing to work with him, or they weren't able to work with him. So I was passed around a lot. I then found a balanced trainer who was quite heavy-handed, but she weren't scared of him. So that's where my career started. Started off in the balance training community and moved on from there, really.
Wow. I didn't know that. I did not know about the Cane Corso at all.
Did you not? So that gets worse, that story. Jesus. So he's the reason I became a dog trainer. So I started training him in classes, and I had a bit of a knack for it. And then they asked me if I wanted to assist. And I was a very different character back then. I was different, you know. And I was like, yeah, I'll give that a go. Like, I've got plenty of free time. So I came in, started assisting, then was given my own class, started doing my own classes, but I still couldn't move forward with this dog. You know, and I was following techniques where it was like choke chain on the dog, take his head off every time he goes over a threshold. And I was being told that he was a dominant dog and that he needed to be put in his place and all the rest of it. And he wasn't. He was terrified. However, I was also told that neutering would solve the solution. So I took him to the vet, and a combination of having me with all the mistakes that I'd made, the dog himself, and then a vet that didn't really listen to me. So I was like an assistant dog trainer at this point. Took him in, and I said to her, I said, he needs a couple of minutes to calm down, because like I can tell he's all over the place at the moment. And she was like, yeah, no problem. And he was hiding behind me, but he had his front feet on the scales. And it was almost like what I'd said to her had gone in, but she didn't hear it, because she looked at him and went, oh, while he's there. And she walked up and scooped up his under his stomach to move his back feet onto the scales. And when she let go of his back feet without any kind of notification, he just span and bit her on the throat. Bosh. She span across the floor, claret coming out of her neck. And I was a different person back then. I was like all about my dog. I was like, they're going to kill him. Like, do I throw him out the window and run? Or, you know, how do I do? And I sort of stood there trying to weigh up the situation. She eventually came back in, because she was... that like another vet came and dragged her out. It was like a movie. Then they shut me in, and I was like, shit. Yeah, she said, either we put this dog down or you go and see this particular person. And this particular person was very expensive, a expert in vicious animals, a veterinary behaviorist, a this, that, the other, da 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 da, and medicated the dog, put a classical conditioning protocol in place, but quite frankly, he was scared of both the dog and me. And back then, like, it was fair enough. So He offered no support. So I paid a large amount of money for an initial consultation, like a proper wedge. And then I couldn't get in touch with him for 6 months. And wow. I needed support. I was desperate for support. I was like, just need help. I need somebody to help me. Finally, I got through to him by going via head office that had to contact somebody else. And he'd clearly been avoiding me. And he said, I'm really sorry. I've had lots of this, that, and the other happening. Why don't I come to your house and I'll do a consultation for free? And I was like, finally. So he came round and was there about 10 minutes before. He was like, we need to put this dog to sleep. And I was like, you need to get out of my house because I'm going to let the dog off the lead. Because I was ignorant back in the day. I had no idea. Like, some of the stuff that he did makes sense now. Some of the stuff that he did also makes me realize why there's such a divide in the community. I think he was my biggest error, mistake, fuck up, but also probably one of the biggest things that changed the course of my life. Mm. Like, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you without that dog.
No, I get that. Do you think that over quite a few of the other interviews I've done with other professionals and stuff, we've kind of come across a very common theme that at certain stages, you know, of dog ownership on our route to be professionals, we believe people, you know, that we perceive as knowing more, and we're told that they know more and they're more qualified. And quite often we are led down the wrong path or a different path, and it takes an event for us to learn that actually there's another way. But some of that I've found is like different influences in our lives at the same time. Of, for example, you know, I grew up with, you know, we always just put a check chain on the dog. That's how you walked the dog. It didn't mean that you'd ripped their head off, but that was the equipment you used. It wasn't, and that was it. So obviously when, for example, I got my first big dog, Rottie Mix, bit of pit bull in there, and she started showing behaviours that, you know, weren't what we wanted. When people were saying, follow him on telly, you know, and yeah, the shiny tooth Mexican, that we can, I've stolen that from Carrie Ann. But like using those methods will work, which no, they didn't, you know, spoiler alert. But at the same time, it's like, well, that fitted with what we'd grown up with or what was the previous information. Do you think that taking all of these different trainers' advice and this particular one, because it fitted in with everything else, you kind of just went along with it because you didn't know anything else?
Well, no, I was paying for professionals. Like, when I hire a plumber to come around and sort out my toilet, I don't stand there and go, is that the only way that you can do it? Or is there another way we can do this? I just go, fair enough, mate. There's the money.
Yeah.
Like, that's not my fucking job, isn't to question the professional. Like, but I've kind of, as I say, I started off with a balance trainer. I found this veterinary behaviorist who basically packed my bags and pushed me much further down the balance side of thing because it wasn't working and he wanted to kill my dog. Then I started to get a little bit of success in the balance side of things. And then it wasn't until I put that dog to sleep that I regretted the choices that I'd made. It was when I put Baloo to sleep that I kneeled in the veterinary office with his body. And I just made him a promise. I said, I'll never, ever treat a dog like that again. I'm so sorry. I was devastated. It fucking ruined me.
It's an awful decision to make. I've been there. And yeah, with that dog that I was talking about. And yeah, I mean, you know, she's the reason I am where I am today. Helping others avoid it.
Yeah, exactly that. I think there's pros in that for dog trainers as well. Like, I know it's not the nicest, but there's definite empathy to be learnt from that situation for people that are going through it at the moment.
Definitely. Okay, so let's move on to what was the next fuck up? What, you know, what mistakes as you started to progress?
I think one of the next fuck ups that I made was, as I became a trainer, I was looking for a recipe sheet. So in fact, that first trainer that I was working for, I remember shadowing her for, so I'm very, like, I know that a lot of people say it, but Like, I'm one of those people that I don't really show a lot of interest in a lot of stuff. But when I do find something that I'm interested in, full tilt, I will go at it and try and get as, like, I'll try and consume it as much as I can. So I was working every weekend, but I was also going out on a daily basis, shadowing this particular trainer on one-to-ones. And I started to pick up that there was just a common running theme. And that this common running theme was that every dog was the alpha and every dog just needed a rank reduction program, which is obviously, for those that might not know, complete tosh. But I started going, fucking hell, you know what? I could do this. I don't need her. They're literally the same fucking everything. And as cocky as I was, I started doing one-to-ones, going out and going, right, oh, clearly she's, you know, built her position to be this. It was just a script, and I made a patter that sounded good, and I went out, and it didn't matter what the problem was. But the mistake there isn't just that I worked from a script. It was, the real mistake was not understanding the nuances that come with training, and that people make it so black and white. But actually, there are so many pros and cons. And the best thing that I've ever done is learnt to not instantly assume something is correct or instantly assume something is incorrect, but to look at it for a skeptic's viewpoint and say, right, what are the pros and cons, and go through that process. Because then you start to really put value behind what it is that you're choosing to do and why you're choosing to do it.
Like, you try and disprove your own theory, as it were.
Yeah. Disprove everybody's theory.
Mm.
Because, like, in the early stages of your career, it's very easy to go, fuck me, that person's a magician, or she's incredible. Like, I need to be her, or I need to be him. And like, the dog training community, like, it gets worse and worse. Like, there's obviously the biggest divide, which is balance versus reward-based. But then there is the reward-based spectrum and the you're not vegan enough argument. And then people fall into certain camps because they fall in with memberships or organizations or associations, and creates even more, like, and then the organizations also are starting to make that worse as well, because they're saying, right, we're not going to give CPD to these courses because they're not run by instructors from our association. So that started to become a thing, which becomes, it's like, and I'm like, you need to look at this much more broadly and say, right, I need to go and learn from this person, that person, this person, that person, and I need to be critical thinking enough that I can weigh up the pros and cons of each approach and have those in my head, so that when I deal with a dog, I can look at the nuance and the individual dog and match them up to the benefit of not only the dog, but the owner as well.
Mm. Yeah, totally. I have rants on this quite regular. we could go on forever on this, I'm sure. But I think that the industry, or at least some of us in the industry, are starting to actually open up a bit more and speak to other people and ask for ideas and share ideas and talk about case notes and stuff like that. I think that is progress, because when I started, that wasn't a thing, and everyone, you had to keep everything to your chest, and we can't have a trainer in our pet dog training class because they might steal all our things. And, you know, when we're all dog trainers, we all use each other's stuff naturally, because otherwise, where do you learn it from? And you use, and then you develop your own little nuances and things like that through experience with specific breeds and situations and stuff like that. But until we all actually start going, do you know what? We're all in this together. Let's share some ideas. There's going to be no progress to the industry. That's my view on it.
Yeah. And there's also, I think there's another flip. So another mistake that I made was based on trying to establish who the best type of dog trainer is. Mm. And this isn't about ethics. This is about their learning, where they've learned that and where they've been through in their journey.
Yeah.
So There's I made the mistake. So I started out in a dog training class, which was very much based around sports, working trials, which was incredible because it had elements of nose work in a pet class, elements of heel work in a pet class, but then things like senderways. And I could never work out the way to explain to an owner, why are we teaching a senderway? I'd be like, oh, I don't really know. Doesn't really seem that much that relevant. But also, nobody's doing focused heel work to them. Fucking shocks, you know? So there was that. And then I stumbled into the science side of it. And then I was like, oh, wow, these people are genius. Like, they're incredible. Like, I was like, and that blew my mind. And then I was like, forget the sports trainers. They don't know what they're talking about. Look at these guys because they're fucking insanely academic and much smarter than I could ever be. So intelligent and rah, rah. And I just assumed that all science was A, correct, and B, good science. On a conference next to a scientist and then looking at me and going, fucking hell, you're really good. Like, and I was like, oh, wow, thanks. I was like, you're really good. And then I watched a video of them training a dog and I was like, oh, fucking hell. Like, you don't even know how to touch a dog, let alone train a dog. What the fuck's going on here? I thought you were like, and then so that was my mistake, is going, oh, they're the best, they're the best, they're the best. Like, instead of just being critical about the whole thing from the beginning. And I think for pet dog trainers, the pinnacle is to be science literate and practically skilled. And the way to get there is to look at the science critically, learn to become science literate, which is hard for me. That's not my field at all. But also practice training dogs. Like, actually do it. And this excuse that dog trainers use of, I train people's dogs all day, every day, I don't want to get home and train my dog. Fucking tough, then. Don't be a dog trainer. Like, you pull your finger out your ass and get on with it. Like, this, there's a job to do. And if you want to be the best, no. If you want to be good, you have to do it. Right? And that doesn't mean you have to spend hours and hours in a raining field and, like, think, but I think there's massive merits to either learning like a dog sport or volunteering at a shelter and getting your hands on loads of different breeds at different ages, at different histories and in a high stress situation, or becoming a trainer for a assistance dog group. Like, they've all got their merits. Like, and if you did a little bit of that over a period of a few months, like, and swapped about like that, that's going to bring your practical skills up. That is, like, and train your own dog. That's the biggest advert. I think that's one of the biggest adverts you can have. Your dog doesn't have to be the perfect dog, but it does have to look like you can train a dog.
Yes. Yeah, I'd not thought about it in that, but I like that. It looks like you can train them, as in, even if you've got a problem dog. Yeah. You know, you've got, you know, at least you're working with it. You're not going, oh, shit, they're just barking at the end of the lead and just leave them to do it.
I'm not hiding it and panicking every time I see a dog. Or no, you're going, this is the problem that I've got. This is what I've got to work through. Like, so my, years ago, I used to own a kennels and cattery and dog training centre in Spain.
I remember.
And we went through a phase of low business on the training side. And it was just, when I got Fizz, actually, I just got Fizz and she was a massive pain in the ass. She was highly reactive to anything that breathed. She wanted to chase bikes. She hated kids. Like those kind of like young adolescent herdy. Also, I want to fuck up anything that moves type dogs.
She's a bad thing.
Yeah. And I thought, do you know what? That my standard counter conditioning protocols weren't working so well with her. But what was working was just training through the problem. So what I started doing was taking her down to public spaces where I had a bit of space and just doing dog training. Like things like, I wasn't doing bitey stuff at this point. So things like dog tricks and like frisbee tricks and getting to do a bit of distance with a beg and that kind of stuff. She was mad about it. If I could do that, she'd be like, ah, right, what do we need to do? And then what happened was I took her down to the beach one day. I did a bit of training and a group of 15 people, not a group of 15 people, a group formed of 15 different people and started watching, which put a little bit of pressure on me, which changed the way that I handled her. Okay. And she went, oh, why are you being a bit freaky? Something must be up. And then she went, oh, it's them. They're a bit freaky, but we're training. So I'll deal with that in a minute. Like, and that was my way to counter conditioning this dog, because I was engaging her in what she wanted to do in the presence of the stuff that was worrying her in the first place. And as a byproduct of that, the amount of business I got was ridiculous. I filled something stupid on that first beach day. I filled something like 3 classes. Yeah. And I was like, fuck, there's a gap here. People don't do this. And that was my thing. As soon as we started losing numbers in classes, I'd go down to the beach, do a bit of training, and I'd leave flyers on the wall. So instead of them waiting for me to finish and talk, where I'd be going up, like downstairs, they'd just pick up a flyer and walk off of it. Like, so it was, I think your dog can be your biggest advert.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I mean, I train Daxies, so, you know, people don't expect Daxies to be trained.
People get upset when I tell them this because they're like, yeah, you got Malinois, so, and like, it doesn't have to be Malleys. Like, if I take Aya out and I go and do some tricks or I go and do scent work, I get the same response, okay? If I take a cute puppy out, I get the same response. They just have to look like you can train a dog. That's it.
Yeah, definitely. So you're aware of the Dunning-Kruger effect, right?
I am, yes.
What was your drop-off moment?
What do you mean? I still think I'm
still amazing
brilliant.
And know everything.
I think mine has not been the usual curve. I think I've had ups and downs, and like, and I think actually, if we look at it, there is probably more realistic diagram would be a much more up and down. People going, you know, I'm getting quite good at this. Oh shit! So, one of my first ones would be attending a seminar by Sarah Whitehead. So I was a balance trainer. I went to this seminar because I wanted to learn more about clicker training. I walked in, there was a fucking hallway full of maybe 40 women. And I was just like, oh, fucking hell. Like, and I remember, like, I was just like, what am I doing here? This is not my crowd. This is not my team. Like, and people were looking at me, shaved head, tattoos, fucking, all right, woo. And where were we? I think we were at RSPCA around that end of the world. And we did a bit of theory and then we did a bit of practical. And she gave me, I think it was like a 14-week-old husky puppy. And I had to teach the dog to lie down. And Sarah had picked up on like who I was and, you know, where, like, you know, she's not a daft lady, that one. And I'd got this dog and it was lying down and I clicked and feed it. And she came over and she was like, right, what have you taught this dog? And I was like, down. Like, and she went, actually, what you've taught it is after the mark, it switches its hip without getting up and then waits for you to click again. And my head just went, and she saw that happen and she went, now, if I asked you to train that, how would you do it? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. In fact, I don't know anything. I'm so sorry. Fuck. And that was a pivotal moment in my career, very, very early on in my career. And I just went, right, I'll fucking show you. I'm going to go and learn this shit. And I went on every clicker training course I could find. I went on every... That was a pivotal moment for me crossing over from being a balance trainer to reward-based. Because I was like, shit, I do not know. I need to wind my neck in here. So that was a massive turning point. I'd say probably that was my biggest one. That was my biggest one.
And another?
Well, I think they constantly come. So I think now my ego is not big enough for me. I look forward to the opportunity to be humbled because I go, fuck, there's shit I need to learn here. This is what I love. This is what I Like, even with the most outlandish stuff, like, you know, people that can talk to fucking dead dogs, I'm like, I want to be wrong. I don't believe you, but I want to be wrong. And I'll fucking learn everything you can tell me. Because if there is a way to talk to my dogs, let alone dogs that have already died, I'm fucking in. I am in 100%. You know? I mean, I'm not there yet, but I'm open to learning about stuff. But, you know, you've got to provide evidence. Yeah. So I suppose, what else could I say that was a pivotal moment? There was Baloo dying. That was a pivotal moment for me, but that wasn't really a Dunning-Kruger thing. Sarah Whitehead was probably the biggest one. I had another one where when I started learning from a trainer called Michael Ellis. So I always quite had a bit of a BMOB on it because I was once on an instructor's course and the instructor running the instructor's course pulled me out and said, like, who would take a class by this man? Like, because he's shaved head, tattoos, like, speaks like I speak, blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking, you cheeky bastard. Like I wouldn't let you talk to me like that if we were in a pub. Like, I'm not sure I'm all right with this. And I then went out and tried to learn how to present. So I went out and, like, did it. And I kind of thought, I know how to get a crowd over now. I know how to have a bit of banter with customers. I know how to... where I can tease and where I can't tease. And, like, and don't get me wrong, I fucking got that wrong a few times. But Michael Ellis, although he trains in a different manner to me, the knowledge that that man contains and his ability to impart it to people is incredible. So again, when I heard him lecture, I was like, there's so much more depth in your knowledge and I might be able to give information to people. And that made me go, right, I need to go from here to this depth now to learn how to put that amount of information across. So that was a big turning point for me. And no, I suppose that's not really Dunning-Kruger. That's almost the opposite. I was going to say there was a YouTube video that went viral and it was the shock collar video. I had a couple of clients that day that had been putting shock collars on their dogs and it had basically screwed their dogs up. And I took a sledgehammer to a collar and I went to bed and the next morning there was like 86,000 views on it, which at the time was massive. Like now it's millions and millions, but at the time it was massive. And that propelled my career quickly, but also it made me try and show people they expected because I was good at something. They expected me to know everything about dogs. And I was like, shit, I've got to know everything about dogs. Like, and I tried my hardest, but then I realized, like, that's not a fucking thing. I don't have to be, everything to everyone. And I've got to find something that I enjoy doing and be really good at that. And it's all right. Yeah, one of the biggest lessons, because it's a lesson that it took me a while to learn, was it was all right for me to go, I don't know. What the fuck are you talking to me about? One of our biggest courses is called the Behaviour Bible. And in that, Dean and I take different topics when we're learning. And I was assigned to teach about genetics. I was like, I barely got a fucking GCSE to my name, mate. Like, what are you, who the fuck am I? Why would they listen to me about genetics? So we discussed this, and I had to carry my share of the work. I couldn't expect everybody else to do the work. But I said, the only way I'm ever willing to teach about something like that is get somebody who knows what they're fucking talking about to look at my work and to go, that's rubbish. This is great. Like, yeah, let's use this bit. So we ended up with a geneticist from Harvard who was the expert. And every subject, we have an expert from that field look at it and make sure that we're not talking shit. Because... I'm not a geneticist. I mean, I've learned a hell of a lot about genetics because I was fortunate enough to have somebody who was very, very intelligent, very smart and very skilled at teaching and walking me through the process. So it was almost like having a one-to-one tutor. It was a dream come true, you know, paid for it. I was like, this is incredible. But yeah, I don't have to be everything to everyone.
No, I've learned that one along the way of, do you know what? I think... early on in the days of being a dog trainer, you're like, oh, I can't tell them that I don't know that. because yeah. you've got this ego to protect and you've got this facade and this whole mask of I know everything, I'm the best, and you know, and now I'm like, I don't know that, but I can send you to someone who does. Or you might want to try so and so.
Yeah, or let me have a chat with my colleagues, let me da da da. Like, and that the problem with that is not doing that creates one of the biggest problems in dog training for dog trainers. And that's imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
But that so many dog trainers suffer from imposter syndrome because they're trying to, because they believe that they have to know everything about and it's such a hard thing, but actually being able to go, no, let me check. I'll go and find, see if I can find the right information for you. I'll go and see if I can like give you what you need.
Yeah. Imposter syndrome is massive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really a whole series of podcasts, I reckon. It's come up a few times already with other guests, but yeah, it's big. It's very big. Okay, so what is the biggest mistake you see other dog owners and or professionals making, and how should they avoid it?
Okay, so for dog owners, I would say the biggest mistake is thinking that dog training is an event instead of a lifestyle change. So I was helping somebody with their marketing literally yesterday, and we were talking about a sales funnel and we were going through the process, and she said, me and Dean were both on the call, and she said the problem is my industry isn't like dog training. You've got to implement this all the time. It's part of your life. You've got to do it. And me and Dean just looked at each other and we're like smiling, and Dean looked at me and went, because Nando, dog training, like you get a magic wand and it just happens. So,
and it's done. That's it.
And it's done. So owners have the tendency to expect like a dog handler, a dog trainer to be able to handle something straight away. You know, you're go to a restaurant with a friend that's got a dog and be sitting outside at a cafe and the dog will start barking at them and then go, well, you're the dog trainer. Like, I'm like, what? What? For the last 5 years, you've been feeding that dog every time it shouts at you for food. Like, I'm not going to fix that now, here, like this. Like, there's a process. We put a process in place. For dog trainers, I don't know if it's the biggest mistake, but I think one of the mistakes that is most prevalent is that there is this thing that they try and create mini dog trainers out of their owners. So I recently did a reel on this, and like when I hire a plumber, I don't know why I've got plumbers in my head all the time, but
my house is a mess. Pipes at home.
When I hire a plumber, I don't want him to come around and go, right, this is a spanner, this is a wrench, and this is how you remove the thing. And then I'm like, fix it, mate. That's why I'm paying you. Okay. Now, obviously, the dog doesn't live with me, so that isn't completely transferable. But what you can do is take away the dog and give the dog some skills so that when the owner starts implementing the skills, the dog's got a little bit of a bounce. He can go, this is almost like what that dog trainer was doing. So several things happen. Like, let's use sit as a really simple example. If I teach the dog how to sit, and I reinforce that behavior, and I get several repetitions of success and minimal errors within that, because I'm a dog trainer, I should be able to do that, then what I'm not doing is creating this conflict between a dog that doesn't know how to sit and a person that doesn't know how to train a dog how to sit. Okay, so when the person starts getting his mechanics wrong or his timing wrong, there's more forgiveness from the dog, because the dog has got that area, that bounce, that amount of room, because you paid successful repetitions in the first place. So I think dog trainers are too scared to put their hands on other people's dogs and go, right, let me, for the first 3 consultations, for the first half an hour, I'm going to take your dog and you don't even have to come with me, because I'm not training you at this point. I'm training him. Okay. Yeah. And I think that is and it's not appropriate to all dogs or all problems or all owners. But I think there are a lot of owners that, like, again, like in SOX, we've built a system. Like, so there's stuff that they don't even need a trainer there for. Like, before our behaviourists go out and deal with a consult, they have the opportunity, if they choose to send pre-training videos. And this is information that, like, one of my pet hates is the dog trainers or behaviourists that go around to a client's house and they spend an hour and a half fucking talking. Like, I call them an armchair behaviourist, because at the end of the hour and a half, the owner sits there and goes, right, I know I'm bad. I know why I'm bad. Okay? I know technically how to make it right, but I don't know what to fucking do. And I experienced that.
Yeah.
I experienced that. I put I was given a classical conditioning protocol by a veterinary behaviorist for my mechanical or so, and I was making a complete hash out of it. So it is, I think there's an important gap to fill there.
No, I totally agreed on that one. And I've been there. I've done the consultations where I've literally sat there and nattered. And sometimes it is appropriate because you need the dog to get used to you being around, and you might as well use the time getting to know the owner. But 9 times out of 10, yeah, they need something that they can then have the mechanics of and go away and go, right, okay, until they next come, this is what I'm doing. And I've got a clear plan of action to be able to make progress. Yeah.
Even if that's just like emergency protocols, like, what do I do when my dog goes over a threshold? Yeah. Like, they need to have something. They need, like, you can't just leave them there with fucking paperwork, because they're already fried. They're like
you blow their brains.
Yeah. And a lot of people forget how difficult it is being a dog owner with a problem dog.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And that's half the reason why I set up the podcast, because, you know, we've been there. We know the struggles. And I think dog trainers can sometimes perceive or give the impression that, you know, because they now know everything, that all is well and they've never actually been through this. When most of us have been through these struggles, and that's why we became dog trainers, and we can have that empathy for dog owners, and that the dog owners shouldn't have so much, or should learn to let go of some of the guilt of when they have fucked up and they have made mistakes. But essentially, a lot of it is down to, you don't know what you don't know.
Of course. Absolutely. I don't think that ever stops either.
No, agreed. Yeah. Agreed. There's always learning points. I'm always learning from my guys, from clients. And yeah, it's an ongoing journey. And I am very passionate about, you know, when you meet other professionals and like, yeah, I know everything. You're like, that just proves to me that you don't, because you should always be learning. Because science is always, you know, moving forward, and new studies are coming out, and there's more things that are going on, and the dogs, you know, the dogs are progressing because they're becoming more used to being with families, and different, you know, our lifestyles have changed, and that all, like, massively has an effect.
But massively. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah. Cool. Right. So we'll wrap up, but tell everyone, you know, where they can find you, about the School of Canine Science, or SOCS, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. If people want to know more, where do they go? What do they do?
If you Google Nando Brown or the School of Canine Science, you'll find my Instagram. I've got Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. The whole shebang is either the School of Canine Science or Incredimal, which I'm regretting the name on now, but Incredimal, almost like Incredible Malinois. That was the idea that I was going for. Incredimal. So, but yeah, if there's anybody that's got any questions, don't be scared to get in touch and say hello.
Cool. Thank you so much for joining me. I've loved this. And I've learned a few more things about, you know, your journey as well, which has been really interesting. But
thanks.
Yeah, it's good. I've enjoyed it. But yeah, we'll wrap it up there. I will be back with the listeners next week, and I will see you all soon. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.